Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven, non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's RADIO15 for 15% off today.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
And just when they see me and they come up to me and say, you know what, coach, you were really tough and I didn't like you at first, but now I look back and you were the best coach I've ever had. That's the best thing when kids come up to you and thank you for, you know, your coaching. And that's, you know, the best thing I get out of coaching.
And our guest this week is Harry Silverstein. He just recently retired as the head women's tennis coach at Stockton University, and he is one of the top tennis coaches in South Jersey history. Had a long run of success at Vineland High School prior to Stockton. And Harry, thanks for coming into the city and coming in studio.
No problem.
So after all these years, all this success, why was this the right time to step away from coaching?
Well, as I always say, you know when it's time to get out. I kind of didn't look forward to going to practice. Lost a little bit of passion, and along with the administrative part, was getting a little frustrating. I said, you know what? After 43 years, it's time, you know, take some time off and enjoy some of the things you do in retirement.
Does it seem real yet? Because I guess in a way you could just kind of convince yourself that it's just the summer and it's the off season. Do you think it won't become real until the school year starts, when you start not doing things that you're used to doing?
Well, it's real, because I would be recruiting right now and be getting phone calls and emails, and I don't get that anymore. I just ignore it. I know I made the right decision, and I know I'm not going to regret it.
So you talk about you didn't like going to practice. Like, was it during the entire season, did it kind of build? Was it something that, when you look back coming into your last season, that you were ready to make the decision?
Well, one of the things that was a little frustrating, we had coming back for the season, we had 7 girls that were coming out for the team, and we had dropped to 4. And because we didn't have priority scheduling, it was very frustrating, because we could only practice 3 days a week. And I said, this is not fun. This is my last year, you know. And I see it getting worse, not better. Kids were more interested in their jobs. Because it's Division III school, a lot of them had to work and they couldn't practice certain days. And It was just they didn't have the passion that I wanted from them. And I said, you know what? It's time to hang it up.
So let's dig into your backstory. What's your on-ramp to tennis?
My on-ramp as far as how I started to get into tennis?
Yeah.
Well, I was a baseball guy. I played Little League. I played Babe Ruth. I played American Legion, whatever. And I started playing tennis with a friend of mine who had moved from Kansas City, Missouri. And he said, why don't we go out and play some tennis? And I had never played before. And we started playing tennis, and I was a pretty good athlete. And I kind of caught up to the game pretty well. And after a week or 2 weeks, I started beating him, and he had lessons. And I said, you know what? I love this game. You know, I could control what I do playing another person. Like a baseball, you always have to worry about your teammates doing well. And I could control how well I could do on, you know, in that situation. And I just developed a passion for it. I quit baseball, and I just played every day. I would go out, even if there was nobody there, I would go hit off the wall, practice my serve, and just fell in love with the game.
Past being able, like being in control, were there other aspects of the game that really resonated with you?
Yes. I mean, the individual thing is that you can't blame anybody else. You know, it's you and the ball. There's not really umpires when you play tennis, you know. And it's based on the honor system, making, you know, the calls. So definitely you have control of how well you do. And with the coaching aspect, I had few problems with parents saying, well, you don't like my kid, or you think, you know, you have favorites. Well, in tennis, in high school tennis, they have to prove themselves and to be on the ladder and move up. They have to prove themselves. I have no control. So if you're good and you win, you know, you're playing that position. That's what I liked about the individual sport.
As you're falling in love with it, playing it, were you watching tennis?
Oh, all the time. All the time. In fact, not only watching it on TV, watching better players play and trying to imitate their skills. And I could learn a lot. I'm a visual learner, and watching better players play, trying to mimic their skills.
From a professional standpoint, did you have favorites, and did you have players that, when you talk about mimicking skills, that you really tried to mimic and do what they do to be successful?
Yeah, there was a guy from Paraguay, Victor Pecci. Most people have never heard of him, but he had this shot. He had a great drop shot and a drop volley, and that's one of my specialties. And he made it to the top 50 in the world, but I always admired. And this is going back 20, 25 years ago, but his name was Victor Pecci from Paraguay. And I kind of try to mimic my game. He has a touch game, a finesse game. So from a professional standpoint, he was one of my favorites.
When do you start looking as tennis as a vehicle to take you places, as more than just something you have fun with and beat your friend and stuff, as something that could open some doors for you?
Yes. You know, I decided I was going to go to Glasper State to become a teacher in my junior year, and knowing that they don't provide any financial money, you know, because it's Division III, I was just looking to make the team at Glasper State and play for the team and just have fun. I never had any goals of going big time because I didn't have the backing financially or, you know, the teaching of better pros. I couldn't afford lessons. So I never looked at it as a vehicle to go Division I or make money out of it.
What's it like when you started Glassboro State, now Rowan? Like, did you feel like you belonged from a tennis standpoint?
Oh, absolutely. I had a few friends that were on my Vaughan High School team that joined the team, and we had a great camaraderie. I just felt right in as a freshman. I moved to number two singles as a freshman, but I practiced so hard that summer before, and I played first doubles all 4 years, and I had a very good partner that from high school. His name was Sam Gassel, and we just gelled together. We got along. We were good friends, and that was a lot of fun playing. And in college, you play singles and doubles, and that was an enjoyable moment.
When it goes singles to doubles, playing at like a college level or just a real organized level, do you have to lean on different skill sets?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Doubles is all about getting to the net and being able to volley. It's where singles is you can be more of a rebounder, you know, blocking balls, getting balls in play. You can't do that in doubles because there's people at the net. So the skill setting, serve is very important. The return of serve is a more important because you have smaller areas to hit the ball. So it's a more, it's a tougher skill setting in doubles because you have less area to hit the ball and be effective.
When you're at college, when you're playing, what are some of your favorite memories from your time at Glassboro State?
Probably winning the, it was called the Garden State Athletic Conference. And my partner, Sam Gassel, and myself, we won the tournament that year. We beat some very good teams. We beat Kane, TCNJ, and then we beat Montclair in the finals. Montclair was always a top team, and beating them, that was my moment of glory, winning the state doubles champions. And also that Garden State Athletic Conference, every team was represented then. Now it's down to five teams. We had like 10 teams.
How would you describe your playing style?
It's funny because they did an article on myself and my partner, and they called him Dynamite in Sneakers, and they called me a ballerina in tennis court. And I'm all finesse and touch. I'm not a power player. And finesse goes a long way, especially when you play younger kids because they want to just pound the heck out of the ball. And when you take the pace off and finesse and use more spin, they don't like that. Yeah, so I'm definitely a finesse player.
Was that by design or was that just how your game emerged?
I think my game emerged that way, yeah. And I try that instill in some of the younger players. And sometimes they just, especially with the guys, when coaching high school boys, that testosterone level, they just didn't want to use that style of game. But finally, it would take a while for them to adapt that style, and it works. If you watch Carlo Alcaraz, he's got the best drop shot in tennis, and it's so effective.
So you play at Glassboro State. You talk about going to the school to be a teacher. Did you always figure tennis coaching was going to be on the horizon somewhere?
Well, I had some great role models as tennis coaches at Glassboro State, a guy named John Fox and Len Surfistini. They were great coaches, very supportive, definitely into the fitness training of it. And that's what – if you ask any of the players that I've coached, I put a great deal of emphasis on fitness training, running, doing a lot of sprints. And I said, you know what? I think I want to go into coaching. And I'm very demanding from the physical fitness level. And it worked with some of the kids, and some of the kids said, nah, it's not for me. You know.
So what door opens that gets you into coaching specifically at Vineland? Like, was it just, obviously you're an alum, but was it something that there's an opening, I'm going to go for it, or did somebody call you?
That's a good question. So I obtained a job in adaptive phys ed at Vineland High School in 1983, and it just so happened a former colleague of mine was the head coach, and there was an assistant job opening. Worked out perfect, and he said, you want to become my assistant? I said, sure. So I started as assistant my first year. And unfortunately, the following year, he had to give it up because he obtained an administrative position. So I just moved right into the head coaching job that next year and stayed there for 31 years.
Did it click with you, the idea of coaching right away, like right from when you started as that year as an assistant? Or was there some, I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah, it was tough because I obtained a position as a girls' assistant coach. And that was a different thing for me. I had to learn a lot how to deal with females. Okay, I couldn't use the same approach as, you know, when you're hanging out with your buddies and, you know, and teaching guys, you can be a little tougher. So that was a tough situation for me, adapting to working with females.
When you take over the program in 84, like, did you know what you didn't know as far as what goes into it with, I don't know how much of a hand you had in scheduling and stuff like that, and just like making sure their uniforms are there and stuff like that? Did you have to learn on the fly?
Yeah, I definitely had to learn on the fly. Fortunately, in high school, you don't have to do the scheduling and setting up the bus and recruiting and doing the budgeting. It's already there for you. Going to college, it's a total 100% turnaround. You're doing all that. You are the athletic director of your program. So that was a big adjustment going from high school to college. But, yeah, again, you learn – there's not that much to learn. I mean, the schedule's there in high school, and everything's there for you. So it's not too tough.
Do you remember the first time when you're coaching that something you were working with a kid, like you could see the light bulb go off, or you discussed or worked on something with a kid and they did it in a match, like that feeling of fulfillment I imagine you get as a coach when you can see the fruits of your labor. Do you remember the first time that happened?
Yes. Like, well, the first time I remember specifically, I was the assistant coach with another colleague of mine. I was the assistant coach in boys in the spring and girls head coach, and he was my assistant in the fall, and I was assistant. And I liked to work with the beginning players and JV players. And he used to get mad at me because I wouldn't help the higher-ranked players because I love working with the kids. They're like sponges. And I would teach them something, and they would get it right away, you know, because I use a lot of different things. I use some little gimmicks. I have a toilet roll paper that I put on a broomstick, and to teach topspin, I have them make them spin that toilet paper on that broomstick. And you can really develop that motion of hitting topspin with that little gimmick. And I just picked it up somewhere. And you can see how they can adapt to it, you know, to regular tennis ball, you know. So, oh, yeah, working with the young kids as assistant coach, because that's your job as assistant coach, is work with the beginners. And some coaches don't like that, but I loved it.
Tough going from assistant to head coach, just because I think the dynamic with the kids can be different, where once you're in charge of the program, now we're only really talking a year or so here, so it's not like you've got this long track record with the group. But did it feel different when you become the head coach?
It felt different. I think you get a little more respect, but at the same time, you have to let the kids know that the assistant coach, whatever he says, is the same thing that I'm saying. I would demand they give him the same respect, him or her. And you can control that. If the assistant coach makes a decision, you have to support 100%. So I think the dynamics of who you're working with helps out a lot as being an assistant coach, because you want to give the assistant coach responsibility and make decisions.
And you're teaching at the same time you're coaching, right?
Correct.
How does being a teacher make you a better coach?
Well, teaching and coaching are similar. At the high school level, you are teaching, okay? At the college level, you're coaching. That's the best part of college. But at the high school level, especially at Vineland, you're teaching. You're doing very little coaching. I mean, there is some coaching, but in the beginning, when you get these young kids, you're teaching. So you're teaching skills as you would teach a math lesson.
We need to take a break. We will have more with Harry Silverstein in just a few moments. But right now, want to remind you, One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Of course, summer is here, and that means it's a great time to bring the heat in a new Honda. You can head out on an unforgettable adventure, maybe take a sporty sedan for a spin, all while driving with confidence. Check out the Civic, Accord, or HRV during the Honda Summer event. Contact your local Honda dealer today. See dealer for financing details. Delaware Valley Honda dealers, they are truly a great partner to KYW News Radio. We are incredibly grateful for their support. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with just retired head women's tennis coach at Stockton University in South Jersey, Harry Silverstein.
When do you feel like you started to really hit your stride at Vineland as the head coach, where the program really started to cook and reach the levels you thought it was capable of?
Well, that's funny you said that. My first year when I took over the program, we had one win and 15 losses. And I sat down with all the girls. I said, if I'm coming back next year, you have to commit to a summer tennis program. And I'm talking about 3 days a week, right after July 4th, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 6:30, 8:30. First hour, we're going to condition. And then we're going to do skills. If you don't commit to that, I'll see. I'll go somewhere else. And the girl said, okay. And they signed a contract. And then next year, we had a winning record and had a winning record for the next 30 years. So I thought after that first year is when I finally got the program where it should have been.
During that year when you only win once, was there any what have I gotten myself into, or this isn't for me? And I mean, that can be tough, especially when you're young and bulletproof and ready to take on the world, and you struggle like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I inherited the program late, too. I couldn't do it that summer program, and I thought the kids were behind. Oh, it was so frustrating. I mean, if I saw a trash can, I would just kick it. I was so upset. And the girls were kind of used to losing, like didn't bother them. Mm-hmm. And that bothered me more than it bothered them. So that's why I told them, I said, we got to commit. and we got to be successful. And if you work hard, good things will come and we'll be successful. But you just can't come out there in September and start playing without playing the summer.
So how long were you the head coach for both the boys and the girls at Vineland?
So in 1983, I was the assistant.
Right.
And then from then on to 2014, fall season, I was the head girls coach.
Okay.
And then I started, became boys assistant in 1998 and for about 5 years. And then that was 2003. And then 2003 to 2014, I was the head boys tennis coach.
You talked about the difference in, you know, how you approached both of them. Is it difficult having two programs like that, or the fact that they're one spring, one fall, it makes it a lot easier?
Yeah, having that break in the winter makes it a lot easier. Yeah, it'd be hard to go back to back. And there's a lot of like basketball coaches or wrestling coaches that usually take that spring off, you know? Yeah, because it was that you had that winter off, it was pretty easy. I got used to it.
So I think 628 wins at Vineland as a head coach. Do any really jump out at you?
Yes.
You won league championships and stuff. Like what, when I ask you that question, what are the ones that come rushing back?
Yeah, come right to my mind. When we beat Cherry Hill East in 2005, we were the underdogs. They had won since then. I think at the last 30 years, they won 28 South Jersey crowns. And the girls were psyched. They were psyched, and we beat them. I was a little obnoxious. I said, how do you guys feel getting beat by chicken farmers? Because that's how they looked at us. And we went to the state semifinals. They said, where the hell's Vineland? Vineland. Cherry Hill East is usually here. I said, we're sitting home this year. Yeah. But that was the biggest, probably the greatest moment of my coaching career, beating Cherry Hill East. Because they were like the powerhouse. And I had a great, great group of committed girls. And just to add something, they were so committed that I had to go to the courts on Sunday and said, you're not practicing today. They would want to practice Sunday. I said, no, you're taking the day off. They were so committed. And unfortunately, not all my teams were like that. But they were all on board. And we beat Cherry Hill East, and we lost to Westfield, who ended up being the second best team in the state. And we only got beat 3.5 to 1.5. So that was probably the greatest moment of my coaching career.
Now, reading articles about you, it sounds like you paced a lot watching matches.
Yeah, nerves.
Yeah.
Yeah, nerves.
Was that throughout your coaching career?
No, I got better in college. I got better in college because I realized that pacing and kind of making facial expressions of like, you know, frustration doesn't help. Girls pick up on that. Yeah, college I got a lot more mellow. But again, that testosterone level of winning and, you know, took over. And I couldn't hold it in, you know. So, yeah, I paced and, you know, threw tennis cans down. Because there's not much you can do. You can't yell at like, as a coach in basketball, you can yell at the official or just show your frustration. You've seen basketball coaches. Can't do that in tennis, you know, so it's tough.
And that's one of the questions I like to ask is when you kind of transition from player to coach, when you're a player, you're doing it. So you've got the control.
Right.
But once you're coaching to what you just said, you're ceding control. There's only so much you can do. You can work with them, put it on, you know, talk about the matchup, watch video, whatever it is. They got to do it. And it can be difficult to cede that control, as right. you just talked about.
And, you know, going over that, when you coach college, you're allowed to coach on the court every point. So you have a lot more control and less say. In high school, you have to wait on every odd changeover. So if the score's 1-0, you got to wait till the score's 2-1 or 3-0. And you can't say anything. In college, you can say whatever you want in between points. That's why I enjoyed college. I felt like I was really coaching. And I'm on the rules committee for New Jersey High School, and I'm trying to change that rule. So coaches can say, look, bend your knees, throw the ball higher. They're doing it in the pros. So, it's frustrating when you can't do anything.
So 30 years at Vineland as the head coach, and then you go to Stockton. Was it something that you were looking for a new challenge? Does the opportunity present itself? And you think, well, maybe that would be interesting. You know, it's in South Jersey. You know, how does that come together?
Yes, well, a good friend of mine, a colleague, Phil Birnbaum, was the head coach at Ocean City. Then he went to Stockton. He started the program in Stockton. And he gave me a call. I said, Harry, I'm retiring. Would you be interested? And I said, it was right at the time I'm retiring from teaching. And I said, absolutely. What do I have to do? And he says, look, just put an application, put your name in, and you go through the interview process, and I'll recommend you. And I got the job. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was looking forward. And I passed on an opportunity to coach one of the greatest players to ever play at Vineland High School, Tess Fisher. I don't know if you heard of her. She won the state championship, and I passed that opportunity. I said, this is only going to happen once in a lifetime. Jump on it. You're retired. You have the time. And, yeah, when I offered the opportunity, I jumped on it.
So I think we talked earlier about, you know, when you take over a program, knowing what you don't know, and you reference when you take over at college. Like, was it overwhelming at first, the things that you had to be responsible for?
Oh, I'm glad. These are great questions. When I first took over, again, I'm into the fitness stuff, and the old coach wasn't into that. And I had him run 2 miles the first day, and they rebelled. We don't run. We never run. I said, well, you're running with me. And that whole year, it was frustrating. I said, I don't know if I can deal with this rebellion. And I had to suspend a few kids. So finally, they adapted and say, look, I'm the coach. I'm still going to be a coach, whether you like it or not. And you're going to have to adapt to the way I coach, or there's a door. So that first year was tough. First year was tough. But, you know, they said, we're going to have to, you know, adjust the way we're thinking.
How about just from a paperwork standpoint?
crazy paperwork. Now, like I said, you got to do the scheduling. And every time you leave campus, you have to fill out a roster report with the girl's parents' emergency number, their address, and send it to the police station. It was like so much paperwork. It was crazy.
How long did it take you to get your arms around all of the non-tennis, non-like actual coaching stuff that you were responsible for?
Well, I never liked it. By about 4 or 5 years, I got it down. You know, but I never enjoyed it. And again, I wouldn't let my assistant do it because I said, that's my job. And I got used to it, but I wasn't happy about all the extra stuff.
You talked about at Vineland, and at high school, it's more teaching. And in college, it's coaching.
You're coaching, yeah.
Were you aware of that before you took the job, or was that something you learned? And you talk about the rebellion of some of the kids. Like,
yeah.
Was that something you had to adjust to?
Well, I had to adjust the rebellion, but all the players that I coached, 95% of the kids played number one in high school. And when I recruit, I try to recruit number one or two singles of high school. I don't want to try to recruit doubles players, especially in South Jersey, because their skill level is not high enough. So I was dealing with kids with a lot of advanced skills, and I knew that. And I said, wow, this is awesome. I can do a lot of stuff. In practice, I could never do it in high school. So, yeah, I knew that was going to be the case.
How long did it take you to get your arms around recruiting, and what went into it?
Man, that was the most difficult part of the job, being the fact that you can't offer money. A lot of kids in South Jersey, tennis players are high academic kids, and they want to get out of South Jersey. So I would try to recruit from North Jersey, and most of those kids didn't even know where Stockton was. It was very frustrating trying to recruit kids. I got lucky. 1 year, I had a girl from Spain who I don't know how she got my name or Stockton. She just looked it up on the internet. She wanted to go to Division III school, and she sent me a video of her, you know, her playing. I said, you don't belong here. You're a Division I player. She goes, no, I don't want the pressure. And she came in and played number one as a freshman, was player of the year. And I just got lucky. I don't call that recruiting. But that's very rare where you get a player that wants that skill level, wants to come to Division III school because they want money.
How much do you think your high school coaching experience helped you as a college coach? Like, how much different would have been if you had gone right to college, you think?
Oh, you need high school experience. You need experience coaching, dealing with student athletes. The high school experience doesn't help you dealing with some of the colleges, because you have to worry about students taking the right courses, you know, towards their major. So that doesn't help you. But dealing with student athletes and having experience with that, and then also the better part, you're not dealing with parents at the college level. That's another positive aspect. In high school, you're always dealing with parents. I don't care what coach, how successful coach you are, you're going to deal with parents that are unhappy. And at the college level, you don't have to deal with parents. I was told the first interview, you never have to talk to a parent. I said, really? I said, no. You talk to the student athlete, but not the parents. I said, this is a job for me, not dealing with parents.
So I asked you your most memorable wins from Vineland, kind of the same question during your time at Stockton. What are the matches or the victories or the moments that rush to the top of your memory?
Well, one of the things that I did and I was responsible for, I take a lot of credit. When I got there, there was no playoff system. And I lobbied for a playoff system because we would have the regular season and then they would take the top four teams and then they would have a playoff. Because what happens, we would play TCNJ at the beginning of the year and we got better. And I thought we could compete with them at the end of the year. So if you improve, they never had it. And I lobbied. It took me a while, and we have the playoff system. So we came, just getting second place at TCNJ was the biggest accomplishment. I think 7 out of 11 years we came in second. Yeah. And that's when I received, again, TCNJ, they've won 200, I think it's up to 259 straight conference matches. So I knew we weren't going to beat them, but I wanted to come in second.
How hard is it, going back to the high school, when your kid comes in as a freshman, and you talk about it's a lot, it's mostly teaching, but how hard was it to project with kids 13, 14, 15, what they're going to be 16, 17, 18? And how often were you surprised that a kid that you thought was had a modest skill set turned into a monster? Or how often you thought, wow, this kid really has it and just didn't work?
Well, you can usually tell by their mindset with practice and how motivated they are to come to practice and how much they're into. I had a young lady as a freshman was last on the ladder, last. And in 1 year, she went from – we had 30 girls there, I remember. Went from 30 to number 2. Unheard of. But so motivated and so competitive and just worked every day. And to be honest, I never thought she'd move up that high. Okay. But usually as a freshman, you're looking at their athletic ability. And if they're athletic, they can improve. If their eye-hand coordination is not real up to par, you can probably predict that they're not going to excel. But there are a few surprises where kids, you say, I never thought they would be really good. But you know what? 2-3 years, they mature physically as mentally. So
when you were recruiting, would you ever fish in other ponds? And what I mean by that is kids that maybe play tennis, but their focus is some other sport, and you could see the nuts and bolts of what you needed and try to convince them to focus full time on tennis?
Yeah, absolutely. Anyone who was interested in athletic, even if they played another sport, I would try to convince them to come out for tennis. My recent captain gave up a Division II scholarship for softball to play tennis for me for 4 years. And that was one of the reasons I stayed. I was going to give it up a year before, but she came up to me and said, I heard you're retiring. She says, please stay one more year for me, because the reason I came to Stockton was to play tennis for you. So I said, all right, I'm going to stay one more year. But she had a full, well, almost a full ride for Division II softball for tuition, and she gave it up to play tennis, and she never regretted it.
My final question, more than 40 years, I think combined like something like 727 wins or something like that. What are you most proud of from your coaching career?
Basically, the relationships I had with student athletes. I got invited to a wedding, one of my college athletes. And just when they see me and they come up to me and say, you know what, coach, you were really tough and I didn't like you at first, but now I look back and you were the best coach I've ever had. That's the best thing, when kids come up to you and thank you for, you know, your coaching. And that's, you know, the best thing I get out of coaching.
Harry Silverstein, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And
And that will do it for this episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Harry Silverstein, who just retired as Stockton University head women's tennis coach, for coming in studio and being our guest this week. Now, if you like the show and you listen on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review. It would really help us out. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next time when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.